call to order the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development. It is Wednesday, March 6th. Today we will have a hearing on a few bills, and we're going to switch the order around just a little bit. But I want you to know, as usual, that all the bills that you'll hear today will be laid over for possible inclusion. Last but certainly not least, it is always my reminder that when individuals come up to testify, each testifier outside of the author or the Senate author will be given 2 minutes to speak. We encourage you to not repeat what your other co-testifiers have laid out, and that you build on that testimony. And we believe that's beneficial for all of us, not only sitting here at the table, but for you and for the public. It is good to see that Senator Putnam is here, and I believe his testifiers are here as well. And so in order to give him a minute or two, he is ready as usual. He's from St. Cloud. He's always ready. So we will start with Senate File 4150. So I'm going to ask Senator Putnam to go to the table. And once he's at the table, he will give us his opening comments, and then we will then go forward from there. I will just also note that a quorum is present. Senator Putnam, whenever you're ready, please feel free to go forward. And I believe that you have two testifiers. You got Sarah Klein and also Ann Leland. And is Ann Leland with us, or is she going to be? Okay, great. If you would join our wonderful senator at the table, that would be great. Now that we have everyone, Senator Putnam, you can give your opening comments and statements and proceed in the manner that you see fit.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill, and thank you, members, for your attention to this important issue. Members, we learned during the pandemic that the scope of issues facing our communities grew, and we grew to appreciate government's role in appreciating some of those challenges, addressing some of those challenges. And one of the things we learned in Greater Minnesota in particular was that government doesn't have the capacity to address every problem that sometimes can be helped with local homegrown solutions. For those two reasons, awareness of novel issues and their scope and the need for a local non-governmental solution, we began to truly more rely on and appreciate the importance of nonprofit organizations. Now, realizing this need, under the leadership of you, Mr. Chair, last session, the Minnesota Jobs and Economic Development Committee invested in a number of existing nonprofits directly. But we also realized that new organizations are appearing and doing local good. So we supported Propel, a nonprofit that helps mentor new organizations. Today, Mr. Chair and members, we have an opportunity to build on that investment and address the other side of this coin, the need for support for other practical necessities that are not currently being attended to. Senate File 4150 appropriates $250,000 from the Workforce Development Fund to Equispace, a nonprofit center in St. Paul, to provide services such as IT, accounting, human resources to small and startup nonprofit organizations. The mission of Equispace is to provide a platform for nonprofits, high-functioning workspaces, shared knowledge, resources, and opportunities for collaboration. Nonprofits are doing the work of government and being asked to act like businesses. But people do this work from other backgrounds with other motivations, which highlights how important this investment in this specific organization is, because it's not just about helping those who are helping others. By providing increased access to accounting services in particular, this appropriation will also provide for greater accountability and more reliable reporting from our nonprofit sector. At this meeting, Equispace is represented by Sarah Klein, its executive director.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. Ms. Klein, will you certainly provide your 2 minutes of testimony, but before you start your testimony, please identify yourself for the record. Ms. Klein.
Sarah Klein, Executive Director of Equispace. Thank you, Senator Putnam and Chair Champion and members of the committee. Again, I'm Sarah Klein. I'm the Executive Director of Equispace, and I'm here to support Senate File 4150. Equispace will be supporting 20 to 25 small to mid-sized organizations and bringing over 250 jobs to St. Paul via the opening of our nonprofit center in August of 2024. The Equispace model creates many efficiencies that allow leaders and teams to focus on their mission work. We do this through shared services, such as the things that Senator Putnam mentioned, and any emergent needs that arise from nonprofit leaders. We will amplify and create intentional opportunities for them to collaborate and partner to bring more effective service to our community. We provide educational opportunities to ensure that leaders understand their obligations and responsibilities as it relates to their nonprofit status, financial reporting, human resources. We understand that laws and requirements often change, and it's important for us to bring that information to small nonprofits that don't have the capacity to hire staff to provide that sort of guidance. This support is truly transformational for our nonprofit sector. Thank you.
Ms. Klein, I have a question for you. I'm looking at the bill. I'm looking at line 1.8. Can you take a look at line 1.8? And then I'll go to Ms. Leland after I ask this question.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a copy of the bill with me currently. I'm going to see if I can pick one up from Mr. Melton.
Someone bring it to you there, Senator Putnam. Here it comes. So, Ms. Klein, you have talked about some of the things that would be important to do and providing workspace, but you say here, I look at line 1.8, and maybe you can answer this, or maybe Senator Putnam, it says on line 1.8, money may be used for workspace. Tell me what that means.
Sure. So Equispace is a nonprofit center that provides space to nonprofit organizations in addition to the shared services that we mentioned. So that is another service and an amenity that's available to organizations. That's an important part of the model.
So how will, Ms. Klein, so how will the money, the allocation of the $250,000 be used for that?
Sure. Some of that is to ensure that organizations have access to some of the shared spaces. So things like conference rooms, community space, a kitchen area that this appropriation will support their access to in terms of space.
So Ms. Klein, just to be clear, that so money from this appropriation will be used to pay you all in order to have space for
in part so that organizations have access to the space that they deserve and need in order to do important mission work in our community.
And Ms. Klein, how many individuals are we talking about when you say how many people will be served by this $250,000?
Yes, well over 250 employees can come to this center in St. Paul.
So did you say 250 employees?
Yes.
250 employees from different nonprofits?
From different organizations, correct.
And how long have you all been in existence?
We have been in existence since 2018 as an idea in terms of formation, really gaining insight and feedback from our nonprofit community. So Equispace is formed and informed by our nonprofit community to get to where we are today in terms of the center and the kinds of shared services that are needed.
And Ms. Klein, you all are a nonprofit, which means that you're 501c3, and
correct.
You've been around since 2018.
Correct.
Who's been supporting the organization up to this particular point?
Sure. We've had donations from individuals and private funders and the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation, Bigelow Foundation, and Hardenberg Family Foundation.
And when you say the wraparound services, can you clarify for me what those wraparound services are?
Sure. So things like, as mentioned in the bill, IT support, human resource assistance, accounting, things like communications. So services that oftentimes small organizations need in order to do their work and operate, but can't afford to access at the level that they need. And we all know that nonprofits need to do all of these things in order to run effectively and efficiently. And so Equispace can provide those resources to ensure that they're doing all the things that they're supposed to do.
So this would not be money used directly for the clients, but it seems to be opportunities for those who are creating or running nonprofits. Is that fair to say?
Correct. So, yes.
And is it also fair to say that you all provide backroom services, so services that they would otherwise have to pay for someplace else, that you want us to pay for those backrooms?
Correct. So we create a lot of efficiencies in that in terms of being able to secure that relationship, that partnership with a person to do accounting, for example. So for us, we are using Clifton Larson Allen, a very well-regarded, highly respected accounting firm. And so access to folks like that, we will procure to ensure that these organizations have access to those resources.
And my last question before we go to the other testifier. You said that there's room for 250 employees, and you've been around since 2018. Tell me how many people that you've had in 2018, 2019, and 2020 that you've served each year.
Yes. We have used those years to, again, as I mentioned, formed and informed. So there's been conversation with hundreds of leaders in our community to understand what the needs are of small organizations that are really challenged in our community to do all the things that they're supposed to do.
So I'm sorry if I missed the number.
I would say hundreds of nonprofit leaders have been engaged in focus groups, surveys, one-on-one conversations to understand the ecosystem and landscape in our community, to understand how we got to the formation of the creation of a nonprofit center with access to shared services and amenities.
Thank you. Any other questions of this testifier, or can I go to the other testifier? Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on your question. I guess, you know, when I looked at this bill, it seemed like a lot of startup cost. But you've been around since 2018. Presuming you already have an executive director. Presuming you're already doing and coaching on fundraising. It feels like we're covering your operational cost in this $250,000 as you've been in business. I'm still not quite sure how this is all fitting together, right?
Sure.
What we're doing is we're kind of funding a nonprofit for nonprofits, which seems a little bit twisted on itself.
Yes. So
to the testifier, Ms. Klein.
The appropriation does not cover costs like my salary. It is really to provide the services that are outlined in the bill in terms of shared services that nonprofits will have access to. So the things like IT support, human resources, access to communications expertise, those kinds of things are the things that this appropriation will pay for.
Ms. Klein, if you could look at line 1.9, it says executive director support. What does that mean?
Those are learning opportunities for executive directors within the tenant organizations. So folks that are leading these organizations that need access to understanding, again, what are nonprofit status requirements in terms of making sure that we're upholding our 501c3 status, what are human resource requirements, laws constantly change. So building a community where individuals that are leading organizations have access to learning opportunities, we can bring in expertise to help share new information with them, that kind of thing. So that's what this will support.
Thank you, Ms. Klein. We'll go to the other testifier, Ann Leland, who is the Executive Director of Exodus Lending. Thank you for your patience in us asking a couple questions. If you'd be so kind as to state your name for the record and provide your 2 minutes of testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Champion. My name is Ann Leland. Chair Champion, members of the committee, I'm Ann Leland. I am the executive director of one such nonprofit called Exodus Lending. We work with financially excluded Minnesotans to advance economic justice through consumer lending, community organizing, and advocacy. So we are one of those sort of small startup. We're a little further on our journey, but small nonprofits. Since we opened our doors, we've reached Minnesotans across 46 counties and refinanced more than 1,000 predatory loans, saving our community nearly $2.2 million in interest and fees that otherwise would have been drained from our communities. It was also these Minnesotans who stood up last year to reform predatory payday lending in Minnesota, our advocacy work. I'm here today in support of this bill because the space we work in has a direct impact on our ability to deliver on our mission. mission. Investing in Equispace and funding in this nonprofit center model will allow us to live into our values of compassion, transparency, dignity, and respect by offering a space that is worthy of the community we serve. Too many nonprofits like us are relegated to offices with no natural light, some dingy furniture, and unwelcome rodents as roommates. My staff, board, and most importantly, the community we serve, they deserve the space that brings them the pride and confidence in our work, in our mission. In addition, the access to the shared services we're talking about today and opportunities to connect and network and have support with peers will ensure that we can dedicate our time and our energy and our resources to our mission work, to our actual program work. This work can be really stressful and isolating, and the opportunity to be in community with 25 other nonprofits is a dream that can be realized with this support. So thank you to testify on behalf of this bill.
Thank you and welcome again. So a couple questions. So are you all, is Exodus a part of the workspace that's being testified to today?
We're on the list, yes.
So when you say on the list,
yes,
you're in there, right?
We are sort of on the list when it's developed, when the space is actually developed, we are going to be ready to move in.
So the space is not developed. So
that's right.
So they're asking, so are you all asking for money for us to help you develop that space?
No, sir.
Okay, when is the space going to be developed?
August 2024 is when it will open.
Okay, so the space is not developed, but you guys are on the list.
Yes, that's correct.
And Ms. Leland, one question.
Yeah.
Does Exodus provide any technical assistance for the individuals that you do lending to?
Chair Champion, I appreciate that question. We do. We provide technical assistance and support, development support through partnerships with other nonprofits. So we partner with financial counseling agencies in the state like LSS and Family Means. So yeah, we're sort of a networked nonprofit in providing those wraparound supports around our consumer lending.
And last question, are you all going to pay a rental fee in order to be in that workspace?
Chair Champion, yes, we will pay a rental fee.
And Ms. Klein, that rental fee from the various entities that will participate in this workspace, will that cover the cost of the operations of your entity?
That will cover the cost, a portion of the cost of us utilizing the space that we'll be in. So we are under a lease agreement with SunTide, who owns the building.
Any other questions for the testifiers? Senator Dreheim has an amendment. Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair and members. Good discussion. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. You know, I know it's challenging for nonprofits to find a space and to work together, and it sounds like a wonderful idea. But that's not what my amendment's about. My amendment's about transparency. And same amendment I've offered on many other bills like this. So it's just asking for a report back to us in January of 2026. And that's it. So I hope everyone will support the A1 amendment.
Any discussion on the A1 amendment that's been offered by Senator Dreheim? Senator Herr.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dreheim, I wonder, is that already into our larger pack, you know, larger requirement of the funding that we give it to folks that is a require for them to report back to us without putting this amendment forth?
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator, for the question. You know, I we'll see what the end of the year policy bill will look like, and I'm sure Senator Champion will have some language. This is kind of repetitive, and I just think we need to do a better job. You know, we've had a lot of cases in the media of abuse of good programs that were well intended, and I think the more we can show the public and the nonprofits. Most nonprofits are good, but we need to step up our game as legislators. It's our job to have those checks and balances. And anything I can do to help do that, I'm going to kind of go on the heavy hand side and just ask for a simple little report, which to me should be standard. I don't know if it is in this case, so I am just being cautious. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Drayham, just a couple things before we go and allow Senator Hurd to do follow-up. We recognize that there will always be some conversation in the media, whether good or bad, and I'm not bashing any reporters, but we've been very good about transparency. In fact, Deed does an excellent job, and even before we start putting in the language last year that was authored by Senator Murphy that included both nonprofits and for-profits. So I just want to make sure that these checks and balances that you you care a lot about and I care a lot about, we know that they are highly visible in our bills, even right now and even before that, because we always wanted to make sure that Deed and others were being very clear about watching over the taxpayers' money, and I think that we've done a really good job of that. Senator Hurd, any follow-up?
Yeah, Senator Chair Champion, thank you. I just want to voice my thought about redundancy, and I won't oppose to your amendment, but I just thought that we just had too many duplications out there, and hopefully as the bill move forward, we can consolidate the guardrail provision. So I'm not opposing, I just want to point that out. Thank you.
And again, we will, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion, and as usual, if there's anything that goes forward, we will make sure that there's all these protections in place. Senator Pratt, did you have a question? Are you okay? Okay. All right. Any other discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. All right. Any other questions for the testifiers? Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's I'm going to have a question and maybe a comment, but my question is for Ms. Klein. You're asking for $250,000. You know, I looked up your 990. The last year on file is 2021 that I could find. Can you give me a sense of what you've been bringing in as far as operating resources?
Sure. In terms
Ms. Klein.
In terms of revenue, is that what your question is?
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Klein, I had a chance to look at your 990, and
yes.
The last year I can find on file is 2021. And that shows basically operating revenues coming in of about $38,000. And I'm curious, with a $250,000 request, what have been your operating revenues coming in the two subsequent years since then?
Ms. Klein.
Yes, thank you for the question, Senator Pratt. we have had support from, as I mentioned before, a handful of foundations, so the St. Paul and Minnesota Foundation, the Bigelow Foundation, and the Hardenberg Family Foundation have provided grants to support our operations and for us to do some of the on-the-ground work to really understand the ecosystem and what the needs of our nonprofits are in our community.
Senator Pratt, follow-up?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that you've got those additional resources. Can you give me a sense of what your budget is?
Yes.
Ms. Klein.
Currently, we stand at an operating budget once we open in August of approximately $1.1 million. And so some of that will be generated through income, will be generated through rent revenue, in addition to supports from grants and individuals.
Ms. Klein, just a question before we go back to Senator Pratt. So you said once we're open, so are you not open at this particular time, Ms. Klein?
We are currently in the process of developing the space, and so designing the layout of the space that we have dedicated to EquiSpace, and construction will start April 1, and we anticipate we'll open in August.
So you're closed right now, and you're going to open up in August. Is that a fair statement?
We don't have any space to be operational in terms of a nonprofit center. And so all of the work that we're doing currently is outside of an actual space.
All right. Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just maybe some thought for the committee and Senator Putnam. You know, when I think of the Workforce Development Fund, we're typically trying to help people re-enter the workforce, right, to develop those basic skills. And this feels, we're not really creating any new jobs, right? These 250 jobs that will be in this building, it sounds like already exist in nonprofits that are currently operating. And it might be a more appropriate use to look at general fund monies rather than workforce development funds and save those for really getting people back into the workforce. Just a thought and something to consider, Senator Putnam.
Any other questions for either the testifiers or Senator Putnam? Seeing none, Senator Putnam, do you have any closing comments?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the insightful questions and the opportunity to talk about some of the work that Equispace is hoping to do and is trying to do. I do want to engage for a moment, if I can, just very briefly, Senator Pratt's excellent point about the philosophically, a nonprofit working for nonprofits. And I would say, of course, we have the precedent of doing so last year, but I'd also say that the whole notion of the nonprofit sector has changed significantly given the lessons that we learned from COVID. We have a proliferation of new nonprofits, and people go into nonprofits not because they want to be business people, but because they want to do good, and they want to work in their communities to make their communities stronger. And we, as members of the legislature who control the purse strings sometimes, have a responsibility to expect some of these organizations to behave a bit like a business. Well, if we're going to expect them to do that, we got to teach them how. And this is a project that provides that kind of an opportunity. I appreciate your other concerns about the source of the resources, but I'm saying just philosophically and in the more abstract sense, investment in a nonprofit to help nonprofits actually makes a ton of sense when we're building their capacity, which is what this project would do. So thank you again, Senator Champion, for the opportunity to discuss this issue and members for your consideration and the valuable discussion.
Thank you, Senator Putnam, for bringing this bill, and thank you to your testifiers for being patient and being here and answering our questions. With that being said, Senate File 4150 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, now we will go to Senate File number 3645, Senator Herr. This is the International Institute of Minnesota grant appropriation. Senator Herr will be joined by two testifiers, if my memory serves me correctly, or at least if my notes are correct, Jane Grumpman, who's the executive director, as well as Sandra Salinas, who's the Business Pathway Program graduate. Once you all get settled, Senator Herr, it is your opportunity to present your bill, and then we will go on to your testifiers. To the testifiers, remember, 2 minutes each. Thank you, Senator Herr.
Thank you, Chair Champion. This bill, Senate File 3645, is asking for appropriation to the International Institute to expand their business career pathway for new Americans. And funds will be used for employment counseling, professional leadership training, entrepreneurship training, and work readiness training. I want to talk a little bit about the background of the International Institute as well. The International Institute is located on Como in St. Paul. The Institute has been successfully welcoming new Americans to our community for more than 100 years. The Institute helped new Americans, refugees, and immigrants realize their talents, ambition through outcome-based education and employment programs. Immigrant services, refugee services, supporting new arrival to our community. In the last year, the Institute has served over 4,500 new Americans. Nearly half of them serve in education and workforce training program and ongoing critical services that help new Americans have a stronger start to their new lives in Minnesota. The Institute Medical Career Pathway was recognized by the Department of Labor on their top 10 workforce training programs. They are using this, and the Institute are using the success of this program to build the business career pathway in this bill. I'd like to introduce my testifier with me, Ms. Jane Grubman, Executive Director of International Institute, and followed by Ms. Sandra Salinas.
Thank you so very much, Senator Herr, for your opening comments. We'll now go to your first testifier, Ms. Grubman. If you'd be so kind as to state your name for the record and correct me if I'm saying your name wrong, because I always get it wrong from time to time. And give us your 2 minutes of testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Champion, Senator Hur, thank you, and members of the committee. I'm Jane Grotman, the Executive Director of the International Institute of Minnesota. So in Senate File 3645, we are asking for support of the Institute's business career pathway. The pathway offers customized professional leadership training for new Americans at the Institute for 12 weeks, totaling 96 hours of training to help participants move into the business sector and advance within the sector to a higher position with higher wages. The course helps build business skills and acumen, as well as communication technology skills needed to succeed. It also connects graduates with business leaders through our employer partner connections and through members of our board of directors. And one of our board members is an employee of Accenture, where the CEO, Julie Sweet, has publicly committed to hiring refugees and helping them advance within her company. The majority of program graduates in 2023 were placed in the sector in assistant manager and supervisory roles and in office-based positions. Graduates employed in 2023 had a one-year job retention rate of 92%. These requested funds will allow us to expand the number of people served in the professional leadership course to 150 people served. It will also support a new entrepreneurship class, which will include expanded technology skills training, and that this course will be 8 weeks for 72 hours of training. The business sector has been a hard sector for new Americans to enter and advance within. We're very committed to helping them to not only providing training, but also helping them to connect to the employer partners that we work with so that they can enter that sector and advance within it. Finally, I just want to say thank you to this committee for the appropriation that we receive for our medical careers pathway. The program is expanding as a result of these funds and other funds, and it will be providing 60 new nursing assistants in our community, which, as you know, are very badly needed, and helping other new Americans advance into RN positions. So thank you very much. And next, I would like to introduce our pathway graduate, our business pathway graduate, Sandra Salinas. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and give us your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you. Chair Champion and members of the committee, my name is Sandra Salinas. I am from Peru and I now live and work in Minnesota. I have come a long way, both personally and professionally, since arriving here in 2018. With support from the International Institute of Minnesota, I work my way from speaking minimal English to my dream job at Target Corporation. Before arriving, I worked as a visual merchandiser for Puma in Argentina, and I had planned to look for a similar professional job here. However, the reality of living and working as an immigrant in Minnesota was more difficult than I expected. Fortunately, the Institute's business career pathway gave me the tools I needed to help me transform my career. I began my first talking English and then college readiness classes at the Institute. Despite my talent, I had no professional contacts here or understanding how to break into the American workforce. The Institute Professional Leadership Training, which is part of the Institute Business Pathway, helped me harness my ambition and give it direction. I learned about American workplace culture and communication and how to promote myself. This helped me gain confidence. And that helped me meet a leader at Target Corporation who is still my mentor today. During my professional leadership training, I also learned how to upgrade my resume and cover letter, interviewing skills, and how to apply for corporate jobs. And I learned to identify and develop my skills to become a successful leader. I am thrilled to share that after 4 years arriving in Minnesota, speaking minimal English, last year I was hired as a senior stylist at Target Corporation. If you have been at any Target store or seen advertisement, you have seen the influence of my work. This job has doubled my income, and now I own my first job, my first home in Golden Valley. I cannot thank the International Institute enough for the training I received. I will not be where I am today without them. Thank you for your work and for listening to my story.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and thank you for all the great work that you've done. We sincerely appreciate you, and you did a wonderful job.
Thank you.
I do have some questions for Ms. Grotman. Ms. Grotman, it appears when I look back at what we've already provided for your organization in 22-23, over that biennium, we provided you all $700,000. And then for 24-25, which is the current biennium, we've allocated $1.1 million. But now you're asking for an additional $250,000 one time, and we're not done with the biennium. Can you help me understand why we should do this when it's for the same work that you're currently in the biennium to do?
Right, so most of the funding that you've referenced is for our medical careers pathway. And so this funding is for the business pathway, which is a new pathway that we haven't received funding for before.
So I naturally assume that you all get funding from other sources, that we are not your only source of funding. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And have you started the career pathway that you're asking us for $251,000 for?
Yes, we have.
All right. And how many cohorts have you had already?
So in 1 year, in the professional leadership training, we have offered 3 classes per year. This will allow us to offer 6 classes per year, so to double the number of classes served. And then we're also starting the entrepreneurship training. That class just started. We got some funding from Thrivent Foundation to start that class. And so this would give us more funding because we have a very lean staff. And this would allow us to hire an additional instructor and an employment navigator. But let me just also add, if I could, Chair Champion, that our medical careers pathway has been around for over 30 years. It has many, many funders, private funders, as well as your funding and deed funding. And it's allowed us to grow the program over the years to build up the advancement part of that work and to move people into nursing jobs, which takes a lot longer time than it does a nursing assistant, right? So we're helping people in that program for over 4 years.
Usually, Ms. Grotman, we usually wait until someone finishes with the allocation that we've already provided. And it seems like you're in the first year of the biennium for the allocation that we've already provided some support for.
Yep.
That is a little concerning from my vantage point. Any other questions of the testifiers around the table? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll have a quick amendment here, but I wanted to just ask a couple of questions first, if I may.
Yes, Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Grotman, you mentioned that this funding would allow you to graduate an additional 50 CNA, was that correct?
Ms. Grotman.
Thank you. Senator Pratt, sorry, the additional 60 CNAs is going to be funded by the appropriation that we got last biennium and with some other funding that we have as well.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're talking about the one-time appropriation to hire ongoing expenses for an employment counselor, a digital literacy instructor, and a professional leadership training instructor.
Correct.
How many more students will you be able to serve? How many more will you graduate if this supplemental appropriation were provided?
Ms. Grotman.
Thank you, Senator or Chair Champion and Senator Pratt. As I said in my remarks, we'll serve 150 people in the pathway, which is doubling the number that we served in previous year.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And based on this additional funding, not including the funding that was appropriated last year, as the chair had indicated.
Correct.
Ms. Grotman.
Chair Champion, thank you. Senator Pratt, yes, that funding appropriated last year was only for the medical careers pathway. This request is for the business pathway.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer the A1 amendment.
Senator Pratt offers the A1 amendment. Everyone should have the A1 amendment in their packet. Senator Pratt to the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this will look very familiar to members of the committee. It's just simply an amendment that would add some additional language on the reporting for the supplemental appropriation. You know, not only talking about the number of students served, but getting into the type of wages that they'll be making. You know, as we've talked about in the past, we want people to be entering careers. I appreciated your testimony today. I've been to the International Institute. They're really doing great work, and I think what we saw today is they're really changing lives. But as you mentioned, we also want some accountability around the state resources that we're putting out there, and particularly when we're using workforce development resources, I want to make sure that they're having the impact that we hope they're having, and just to make sure that we get that accountability back from you know, any recipient. And I think International Institute would have no problem complying with these additional requests.
Senator Hurd to the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, I welcome the amendment. You know, I expressed earlier that there may be redundancy, but I trust indeed, and I also trust in Chair Champion that, you know, when he compiled the omnibus bill on this layover, things will be consolidated and, you know, maybe even better than the amendment it is here. So, but thank you for bringing that forth, and I wholeheartedly accept the amendment.
Any other discussion on the A1 amendments? Senator, none? Okay. All right, nothing on the amendment. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The A1 amendment prevails and is adopted. Did you have a question now, Senator Gustafson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that the testifier did a good job. I know it's not easy to come before the committee, and I didn't want you to leave before I heard that, or before you heard that I thought you did a good job, and thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Gustafson. We join in Senator Gustafson's recognition of how great of a job that you've done. Any other questions to the testifier before we allow Senator Hurd to have his final comments? Seeing none, Senator Hurd.
Thank you, Chair Champion. You know, Ms. Salina here's story is one of the American story. Many times, folks that are here in this country for many generations forget their roots, and as the first Americans, first generation of new American being here, I wholeheartedly understand her experience. When we come from nothing to something here, but then International Institute allow us to explore ourselves, push us a little further for some opportunity, and also be self-sufficient and contribute back to America. That's what makes us proud to be a citizen or a person that live in this country. The International Institute have been in service for 100 years, and I'm sure they have helped many new wave of new Americans, whether from Europe or from Southeast Asia, which myself I identify as East Africa, and we would not for some physical location visibility that we see out there, like Farmers Market or Smalley Mall. We would not have seen this without the International Institute inspiring or empowering the entrepreneurship in this new American community. And there will always be new American coming, whether that be from Kenya, Liberia, Afghanistan, and Ukraine, and continue. And so I'm glad the International Institute is here to empower and make America more welcome to all. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and ask that you support this legislation.
Thank you, Senator Hurd, for those wonderful comments, and thank you to the testifiers for joining us today. Thank you for your patience, and thank you for that powerful testimony. With that being said, Senate File 3645 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will now go to Senate File 4027. I'm going to take the testifiers stand there, or seat, I should say, and Senator Muhammad will become our chair. Who's going to do the PowerPoint?
Darielle's going to run that.
Okay. Can you, let me get her a chair. Okay. I'm going to get her a chair.
That's fine. All right. I'm plugging it in. We'll figure out the rest of it. I know that's what I was going to ask.
Senator Champion, I understand that you have an author's amendment, and I believe that council have a technical amendment. Should we take care of that first?
Yes, Madam Chair, if that's possible for us to do the author's amendment and the other modifications to get the bill in this shape that we would like. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, we'll start with the A1 amendment. Senator Champion, can you briefly explain what the A1 delete all amendment is?
Just so that folks are, or that the committee is really clear, the initial bill known as Senate File 4027 had only one policy change to it, and now Senate File 4027 will be the vehicle bill where there's additional policy considerations that we're going to put on the table from deed. So all these are from deed. We're not changing anything. We're not hiding anything. We're simply putting the bill in the shape that the department would like as well, and would have all the policy or proposed policy changes in one place as opposed to six separate bills, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Senator Gustafson moves the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those that are opposed say nay. The motion prevails. And next we have the A2 amendment, and Council, will you explain what that one does?
Madam Chair and members, the A2 amendment would just do a couple of things. The change on line 1.3 would make sure that the membership for the Energy Transition Advisory Council is now reflects that the voting membership count will be 19 members because of the additional person member being added to that advisory committee. And then the changes on lines 1.4 and 1.5 are just clarifications of what the administrative costs for the Northland Foundation. They would be coming from the total appropriation that was provided for the Canadian Border grant program last year, the relief program.
Thank you, Ms. Fontaine. Senator Fontaine, Senator Champion, are you comfortable accepting the change that were outlined by council?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Awesome. And Senator Putnam moves the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those that oppose say no. The motion prevails. And now go ahead with your presentation, Senator Champion.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Just as an introduction, I'd like to remind folks or the committee that the mission of DEED is to empower the growth of the Minnesota economy for everyone. And each of the following policy proposals that we will walk through shortly allows the agency to better carry out this mission and live the values of focusing on the customer, creating inclusion, and seeking solutions. So with that being said, I'd like to introduce Commissioner Verilek, who is going to give some opening statements, and then you also should have in your package the legislative policy proposals that my testifiers will walk through, and so that you have that robust and complete understanding of what we are putting forward as policy proposal. So with that being said, Commissioner Verlich.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Commissioner Verlich, please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Vice Chair, members, for the record, my name is Matt Verlich, Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And Mr. Chairman, wanted to say thank you very much for your remarks just now and for the opportunity to be with all of you again. When I was here on Monday, I joked that we are starting to make this a tradition. And now with our third hearing in 10 days, I'd say the tradition is gaining momentum. So great to be with you. Also wanted to say to all members here on the committee that I truly appreciate the chance that I had to make my case for confirmation and appreciate everyone's trust and support. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, I want to say an additional thanks to you for carrying this bill. As you noted, these are changes that will enable us to better carry out our mission. And the only thing I would add to what you shared is that the nature of the suggested changes, they are all things that we have sourced from our partners across Minnesota. I think that's good process, and it illustrates the kind of accessibility and collaboration we are aiming for. And so with that, I would, with the Vice Chair's permission, invite my colleagues to carry on and talk about the individual proposals.
Thank you, Commissioner. And next we have Mark Majors, who is a, or Mr. McKinnon, who is Deputy Commissioner for Deed. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner for Economic Development at Deed. On the economic development side, we have five changes that we are proposing. The first is in relation to the Job Creation Fund, which is one of our business assistance programs that we have run since 2014. This change essentially would switch the definition of a job to full-time equivalents from a full-time job. This would align all of our programs through the Minnesota Investment Fund and some of our other programs that are based on job creation all use FTEs as the measure of job creation. As you all know, employers are being flexible to attract talent today. The way to think about this is if an employer creates four jobs at 32 hours a week, it's the same as three full-time jobs, 120 hours. And so we would be able to count the three full-time jobs, essentially, is how we administer it. Previously, we could not count any of those jobs for this program, and as you could suspect and probably know from folks in your communities, they are doing what they can to attract new workers to their facilities. And so, as I mentioned, it would align the Job Creation Fund with some of our other job creation programs. Our next request comes actually from our local units of government that this program serves. This is the Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program. This is a statewide program where we can help with the cost of public infrastructure to serve basically business projects. We have run this program since about 2006 or so, and it's had varying amounts of money in it over the years, but it's always been various questions that we've received from local units of government. And the first one is, can't you leave it open all the time? Does it have to be sort of this RFP type process? We'd like to be responsive to their needs and not just hoping that everyone can meet our timeline. And then secondly, we want to be firm on the amount of match that's required from the projects at 50%. This aligns it very much like our business development public infrastructure grant program that we run in Greater Minnesota as well. The next change that we are asking is related to our Energy Transition Advisory Council. If you recall, we created an energy transition office, and we have an energy transition advisory council that provides insights into how we might best serve the communities and workers affected by the closure of power plants, coal, nuclear plants all across the state. Cities, counties, labor, workers, et cetera, are all on this committee. There is one group that is omitted, and that is school districts. And so we would add a seat on this board to give the perspective of the school districts, who are also very impacted by the loss of tax base within all of these communities and would like to have their voice at the table. Two other fixes, as you heard from Ms. Fontaine earlier, last year there was $5 million, I believe, appropriated to the Northland Foundation for the Canadian Border County Economic Relief Program. We did not account for the cost that it does have on the foundation, actually, to run and administer the program. And so we're asking for a 5% administrative fee for the Northland Foundation, not for DEED, for the Northland Foundation to use to administer this program. The second other technical fix that we're requesting is to adjust the timeline of our Launch Minnesota program. In previous appropriations to Launch Minnesota, we have 4 years in which to spend the money. This appropriation was provided 2 years this time, and we are simply asking to extend the time frame to have that money available for some of our grants to some of the small companies that we provide that money to. And that concludes my programs in my area, and I'll turn it over to Mark.
Thank you. And last but not least, we have Mark Majors, who is a Deputy Commissioner for DEED. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Mark Majors, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Workforce Development at DEED. It's good to be here with you again, I think three times in the last 12 days. We have some technical changes we would like to make to some of our programming around our dislocated worker program. As you may know, it was disclosed last week when Commissioner Varick spoke, we were at about a 68% participation rate for the state in terms of workers. And congratulations to you all last year by moving the jobs bill putting money out for allocations for training. However, we need to get more workers into the workforce. And so this first request is actually to expand our dislocated worker program. We went to categories. We flipped there. That's okay. I can go this
I'll
one.
Follow you.
What's that? Okay. This one is to actually talk about expanding the folks that can participate in our training programs. This somehow aligns with some of our federal programming. So the first one you'll see is to allow individuals, spouses of members of the United States Armed Forces to actually be eligible for our training programs. This, again, aligns with some of our federal programming, and this would just kind of match and it'd be a great mirror. The second was look at individuals with non-work-related injuries or illnesses who need support to reenter and remain in the workforce. And then lastly is to allow individuals who come from low-income situations or who are recipients of public assistance or basic skills deficient to participate in the training programs. Again, this is an effort to get more Minnesotans into our labor force, and so the more that we can expand it, the better off we are in raising that participation rate. And then the next one is on our cost categories. So one of the things that we've heard a lot, and this is actually happening nationally, where we're seeing a lot of folks that are actually coming into what we call our career force locations, but are known as one-stop centers around the country. Our folks are coming in, they're looking for basic career services. A little bit of career exploration, a little case management, just kind of guidance on how to move through the system and get a job. Folks are not really focusing so much on training because they can go to work immediately. Our cost categories as they stand now are very restrictive to our partners, and our partners have said to us quite a bit, especially over the last 3 years. Hey, is there a possibility that we can actually move these cost categories and allow for more spending in, for instance, career services versus training? We've said it's a legislative situation. We can't change that as deed. However, we do agree with them. We want to make sure, we want to open up the cost categories so that our partners can better serve our populations. I do want to make note on a few things, because I can imagine what the questions are going to come after this. There's a number of ways that the things that happen. When an RFP is let, all grantees are required to submit a proposed budget, which DEED looks at, and we do a risk assessment when we look at those RFPs. When we do award grantees, we also look at the proposed budgets as well to make sure it matches what they're requesting from us. Thirdly, we also, if a grantee wants to move money, they have to actually do an amendment, which our team actually looks at and make sure that it corresponds with the request that the programmatic corresponds. And then last, as you've probably heard a number of times from the commissioner and the deputy commissioner, we do a great deal of monitoring to ensure that those dollars are being spent and there's accountability for those dollars. So we feel like opening up the cost categories is a great idea, and it's important for our partners to be successful in that they're doing, but we also have the levers and behind that to ensure that we're being accountable for those dollars there. So thank you. Back to Commissioner Verlich.
Thank you. Members, questions for Senator Champion or the testifiers? Senator Draham.
Thank you, Chair Mohammed. I guess my first question would probably be Deputy Commissioner Majors on the current cost categories requiring significant more resources to be made available for career services rather than training services. Can you give me an example of one such case?
An example would be a individual. I'm sorry.
Deputy Commissioner, you have to go through the chair.
You would think after 3 days, Madam Chair, I would have got this right. Excuse me, Madam Chair, a member of the committee. A good example would be someone who was just relieved of their duties, and they may be very experienced in their craft. However, they need assistance with doing their resume. And they don't need to actually go to training. And what we see a lot of times, if you see a plant closure or some layoff, is that individuals are, and employers are very hungry to get folks into those openings, is that a lot of folks are need assistance with just that basic resume writing, and not necessarily go to training itself. But with the categories that, when the categories are capped, it makes it hard for those dollars to be moved in order to serve an individual. So in other words, you could have 100 people, it's probably not a great example, 100 people who could walk through the door, and probably 80 of them may just need that career services. However, that entity may only have 50% of their dollars may be allocated towards career services. And so that means that they won't be able to provide services to those remaining individuals. Well, they won't have the funding to cover those remaining individuals. And so the idea of allowing the flexibility for our partners to actually shift dollars where they're and meet and help people where they are is incredibly important for them. And again, the idea is that they will make proposals to DEED, and a DEED team will actually evaluate if that makes sense to shift those dollars. So there's, like I mentioned, those four steps to ensuring accountability. Those are all in play now.
Senator Graham, follow up.
Yeah, thank you. If I could pivot, Chair.
Go ahead.
Let me find the page. You're repealing a couple sections in the bill. Senator Champion, in Article 1, Section 2, you're repealing that 116L.17, subdivision 5, on 2.3, page 2, line 3. And in there, we had put a cap on administrative fees.
Senator Champion,
I'm sorry. I don't know. You probably wouldn't have that language in front of you, but it just is deleting that part of that chapter. And I just don't understand why we would eliminate a cap of 10% on administrative fees on any program with the limited resources we traditionally have in this area. And we hear from all these other nonprofits and groups that want help, and we got to spread it out. And one of the best ways to do that is to cap that. So why are we repealing that section of that chapter?
Senator Champion.
So thank you, Senator Draham. I'm going to let the Deputy Commissioner answer that question. That's a very good question.
Mr. Majors.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, you know, one of the things that we've seen definitely over the last, at least the last 4 years, is that the cost for administrating programs has gone up. And just understand this, if you will, is that when we make a grant award for $250,000, that actually just puts approximately $25,000 for administration. That means that for folks that, you know, to hire, and you kind of heard from the previous testifiers, to hire, cover executive director salaries, to cover financial folks, maybe equipment. And so that, and obviously that makes it very challenging to run a thoughtful, responsible, accountable organization when you have such a few dollars available to those organizations. Now, if we were awarding millions and millions of dollars, I would agree with you 100%, but our grants generally were roughly around $300,000 over 2 years. And so that's not a lot of money in order to administer the grant. So giving the organizations the flexibility to actually hire very strong folks as well to deliver those, to do their administrative work is really key. And as you know, it's also important for our CBOs to be competitive in the work, in this labor force too. So they're gonna actually have to hire, if they're gonna get very good workers, they're gonna have to raise their amount for their wages as well. So I think that the expansion of that allows for that to happen.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Champion.
And Senator Draham, again, DEED will take a look at everything, and they understand that we are very serious about capping administrative costs and not to allow administrative costs to get out of control. The example that he gave is a good one, because when you're looking at the lower in administrative costs for a lower grant, if it's, you know, $250,000, and then if you do no more than 10%, that's You got it, right? But the whole idea is that if you're looking at, I'll use $300,000, then you're looking at $30,000, right? And so we want to make sure that there's the flexibility to deal with those smaller entities, again, not allowing there to be more administrative cost than revenue in order to deal with the programming, just to have that flexibility, because they understand the guiding principle is to get the dollars out for programming and not in administrative costs.
Senator Dran, follow up.
Thank you. I appreciate the response from the author and the deputy commissioner. But, you know, the way I look at it, you know, we've, when we look at labor force participation rate, which I think should be the benchmark for the agency and what they're trying to accomplish, we're relatively close to a 40-year low on workforce participation rate. And we've had a period of time that we've increased spending immensely across the state, especially in higher ed. MnState has a lot of programs that fulfill, I think, some of your goals, and then of course your own agency. And I haven't seen the needle move very far, and in fact I think we've gone backwards from when I was elected. Workforce participation rate was 70. We're at 68.2 or 3, whatever it is. And I just worry about our resources, and when things tighten up, which we heard this morning, Chair Champion, that you know things are going to tighten up in the future. I just really concerned that we're just going to blanket cut out that portion of statute that tries to control costs. And if it's a fact that we need to maybe have a staggered cost system, I could go along with something like that. But then in my mind, I kind of argue with myself on how much should the state be participating in these nonprofits? Are we their only funding source? And I hope not. And if we are, then why aren't they a state agency or part of the state? So I think as this bill moves forward, Chair, I have real problems with just cutting that out. And there's more in that section that we're cutting out, the local government piece. You know, the timeline for when a project should be done. I think that's something we should know. I think that has something to do with how we prioritize what we do here. You know, our partners and our local communities are very important. But we need to be informed so we can make informed decisions. And we're eliminating some of that language that was put in so we could have better communication on those local projects. But I know other members have questions. So I think we really need to look at that section, Chair Champion, and just kind of have a further discussion on it. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Champion.
Briefly, two things. One, well, maybe three. Senator Dreheim, one, we would take a look at that particular repeal, and I'm certain that they will come around and have a conversation with you and others about that, because we want to make sure that we're not overlooking something that the committee will have real concern about. We're not interested in doing less. We are interested in doing what's appropriate in order to meet our objectives. So this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion, just because there might be other policy initiatives that we may want to add onto this bill. But we will make sure that we come back and have a conversation with you and the committee about that. Senator Dreheim, I could not disagree with you more, even though I like you at times, when it comes to the whole whole issue around nonprofits. I believe nonprofits are equally as important as for-profits, and when we get into picking one side versus another, I think that becomes problematic. It's sort of like your hand. You really don't understand the importance of your pinky until it's not operating. And sometimes we think that we could get along without it until we really need it. And so I just want to make sure that we're very careful when we, make statements that could imply that someone is maybe not as important. There's a wise person who says that if everyone was the same, someone would become unnecessary. And so I think it's important for us to understand that everyone has a purpose and serves a purpose, and including but not limited to our nonprofits. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to make this statement.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the overview. I have two comments and one laudatory congratulations. First of all, I really appreciate the innovation that I saw in Article 2 with the Job Creation Fund, where, if I understand Section 1 correctly, we are looking at hours annually to define a full-time employee as opposed to 5 8-hour days. You know, I think that is innovative. I think that's how people work today. I think it's smart. I just thank you for putting that forward. It's a little change, but I think it makes a big difference. I've heard a lot, quite frankly, from laborers who want to work during those long summer nights, summer days, big projects. We have a lot of school projects going on in my district. And sometimes when they hit the clock at 8 o'clock or 8 hours, it's like, well, we only have a half hour of work left or an hour left on this project, and we still have hours of daylight. But oh no, they had to pull everything in, haul it away because they hit the 8 hour mark. And so I appreciate what you're doing here. I think it's innovative and we should look at doing that across other avenues as well. Then my two questions have to do, well, one I think you answered partway, which had to do with the section, Article 1, Section 2, eliminating the fund allocation cost limitations for the dislocated worker program grantees. And I think you somewhat answered that, but just a little bit, noting that that language is always concerning when we eliminate cost, when we eliminate cost limitations, because we know that things cost more than we have money to pay for. It's always that way. We're not making any judgments on any issues or anything. There just isn't enough funding to do everything you want or think you want or dream. So I, if you have more to add to that, please do. I think you covered much of that when you were visiting with Senator Senator Drahan. Take a look there. Who was that down there? But the question, the bigger question I had, which might, which I really would like to get some information on, which I haven't heard yet, has to do with, let's see, Article 2, again, no, Article 3, the IB Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure Grants, Section 3. I would like some rationale for that. It eliminates the subdivision listing the priorities to be considered by the commissioner for the grant program. So that leaves me thinking, and I'm reading, well, it's rather long, so I won't read them all to you, but you could pull it up yourself and look at it. I mean, these are good priorities. Weighing public benefits, potential for local government units to attract viable, innovative businesses, proximity to public transit if located in a metropolitan county, multi-jurisdictional eligible projects that take into account the need for affordable housing, transportation, and environmental impact. The number of jobs that will be created. These are all things that we would want to see in priorities. And so my question is, why is your desire to eliminate Section 3 regarding these priorities? And I don't see that you're replacing it with any other priorities. And as we have well noted here, there are many more asks than there are dollars to go around. So there must be priorities. And it's good to have those written out ahead of time. And so just kind of speak to me about what, why there's a desire to eliminate priorities for the BDEP grants.
Mr. McKinnon.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, when we, in both of our infrastructure programs, BDPI and this one, IBDPI, the purpose of the project is to facilitate private investment. It is to facilitate tax base increase, et cetera. In the case of the IBDPI program, there were grants and there has been grants that we have done where we can just go in and provide infrastructure without a project. And basically what we'd like to do here is sort of make sure that there's a private user that's going to be ultimately investing and making that happen. So that's one of the reasons it facilitates this. It's much like BDPI, although BDP, there's some differences between this. But essentially when this statute was written, it was based on the ability of a community to attract, and I'll just go back to 2006, bioscience companies. And that's what it was based on. And if you recall back during that time, we had a bioscience initiative and we were working with communities on how they could certify themselves and become more viable to attract bioscience type companies. And so a lot of this language is basically cleaning up that from years ago. We agree with you that a lot of these things are very important. They are pretty much standard in how we evaluate and consider projects, and so not replacing the wording doesn't really change how we approach these types of programs and the importance of tying it to eligible projects, and in this case, eligible technologies that the actual company is producing.
Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the explanation, but it still leaves me wanting, knowing that the priorities are being eliminated. And I think it's helpful to always have priorities, especially when you have to determine the distribution of limited resources. So it's in everybody's best interest to have those priorities. And without priorities, you know, if you don't know what you're looking for, you're not going to know if you get it. And so I just think it's important to have those priorities. I wouldn't expect you to change that sitting right there today at the testifying table, but I do hope as this moves forward that you will look for the comfort that you're looking for in priorities and just and update the language so that it meets the needs of the program today, but please don't eliminate the priorities. Thank you.
Mr. McKinnon.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Nelson. Those comments.
Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, like Senator Nelson, I'm going to have several questions, but before we move on, I think Senator Nelson brings up a good point around the priorities and making sure that we're looking at projects through a lens. And as I was going back and looking at this, one of the priorities that we had set that would be repealed is an eligible project is not relocating substantially the same operation from another location in the state unless the commissioner determines the eligible project cannot reasonably be accommodated within the local government unit. So what we're saying is one of the priorities is not to move an existing company from one spot to another, that we really want to create new opportunity, a new development, but this is actually one of the pieces of the repealer that are included, and I think that needs to be rethought. I think Senator Nelson, this wasn't originally one of my questions, but I think she really touched on something in that we have to have guidelines on how we evaluate these projects and the very pieces that we want to that we want to push forward. Senator Dreheim talked a little bit about the concern I have over repealing 116L subdivision 5. Now I can't get to it. But Madam Chair, you know, the answer was the cost of administering grants is going up. But the cost of grants are going up, the amount of money that we're providing. And I think we need to look at administrative cost coming out of these grant programs, the cost of administrating an individual grant to what we need incrementally. Mm-hmm. The administrative cost has always seemed like an overhead to me. That we're not really hiring new people to administer these grants, we're just subsidizing the people we've already hired, and if these grants didn't exist, I don't know that we'd be laying off anyone. And I think we need to have a better tie between the incremental costs of administering a grant and the incremental costs that are truly being borne out by the agency. Madam Chair, I did want to bring up one concern, and I think, well, actually two more concerns. And I think Mr. McKinnon touched on both of them. One is in Article 2 around the full-time equivalency for the JCF. And my concern here, and maybe Mr. McKinnon can touch on it, we want the JCF creating full-time jobs for people. we have a problem today where based on the cost of hiring, the cost of benefits, we have Minnesotans working multiple part-time jobs. And my question, Mr. McKinnon, is, and you can address my concern, is that this would actually be using state funds in the JCF and almost incenting part-time work versus full-time work. I draw a big distinction between the JCF and the Minnesota Investment Fund, where we might be doing more retail and hospitality that's maybe drawing part-time workers from our younger population, our students and others. But the JCF and its focus on manufacturing and other more permanent business industries, that's the word I'm thinking of, really seems like to me we want to be creating full-time sustainable wage jobs, and maybe you can talk about that.
Mr. McKinnon.
Madam Chair and Senator Pratt, you're absolutely right. We are particularly in the Job Creation Fund, working with companies and industries that, A, provide wage levels that are family-sustaining, and correspondingly, the program actually rewards companies for the higher wages that they are paying. We do see, yes, there are plenty of full-time jobs in this. This is not, we're not generally working with companies that are hiring people 20 hours a week, as an example, and that's all they're hiring. It's generally a mix. And what I mean by that is if they're hiring 100 people, 70 or 80 or so are 40-hour week type employees. And in order to get to the 100 that they were talking about, they need to be more flexible. And what they're doing is finding anyone and or folks that are qualified to work at their convenience. And so basically, if they're working 30 hours a week instead of 40, in order to get that person in the door, we're still actually counting those hours, as you know. And so this isn't a situation where most of the employees that we're dealing with are less than full-time. It's a situation on the margins where, yes, you could add a few more jobs by allowing those that are working 30 hours a week combined with four others to make that three full-time jobs. So essentially, it's sort of meeting the situation that we've found ourselves in over the past number of years with a lot of these companies who are having to be very flexible to actually get people in the door.
Senator Pratt, follow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to that, Mr. McKinnon, maybe those aren't the businesses we should be investing in. Certainly MIF is going to local governments for economic development, but this seems to be, these are subsidies for warehousing, distribution, technology-related industries that should be bringing, we should be wanting those folks to be able to hire full-time employees, not full-time equivalents. And then, Mr. McKinnon, you talked about Launch Minnesota, and when you were there when Commissioner Grove and I first worked on Launch Minnesota, and the idea was that this would be spun off in about 4 to 5 years. We're at that point. Can you give me a sense of when we expect to be able to spin mm-hmm. off Launch Minnesota to be its own standalone entity on outside of the agency?
Mr. McKinnon.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, I do recall standing this up and having those conversations, and I don't recall if it was last year or a couple of years ago we talked about where we were at the time and trying to spin it out. We are in pretty much the same situation today, and that is finding a partner who can essentially take it on and be that leadership and play that leadership role on a statewide sort of non-biased basis. We have yet to make a good connection with someone that could actually do that, that has the resources to actually do that and to carry on the program. We continue to have conversations with a few different organizations that we intended many years ago that could play a very similar role. And I think for us, we have found a tremendous value of maintaining this program and running it. We think we've established a pretty good ecosystem and enough partners around the state that hopefully over the next couple of years that we can continue to advance those discussions. But again, we do feel pretty strongly that some of that leadership coming from the state level does enable partners to come along with us and advance the program.
Senator Pratt, follow up.
Okay. Madam Chair, something I want to bring to the committee's attention, because I've been waiting because I thought someone else was going to say it, but Senator Nelson, you were asking about the criteria and that there should be criteria that the department should look at in order to make some determinations. And then Senator Pratt asked about some language that perhaps wasn't going to be any longer present if there's something repealed. If you look at page 10, and someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where that criteria is that you were talking about that is there. What they simply did was reorganized it. That is why that repeal was happening, because it's there. So, like, for example, Senator Pratt, when you were reading the language about the project is not relocating substantially, the same question, yada, yada, yada. That's at 10.12 down to 10.16. And Senator Nelson, the criteria is the following for eligible projects. So if you look from 10.4 all the way to the end, that sort of tells you what the criteria is. It's just sort of put it in a different place or space. And I just wanted to make sure that you understood and knew that that thinking is still there, and it's not just in their head, but it's also articulated in this policy that would be implemented by the department. So I just wanted to make sure that we had that clarity. So thank you. I'm getting the thumbs up from Senator Nelson, and instead of the pen with the light. So thank you so much, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Senator Draham, did you have a question? You know, I fell. Okay, well, seeing there are no more questions, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. And members, that concludes our business for this meeting today, and the meeting is adjourned.